So I found another food topic to talk about. I guess this is special for Thanksgiving. I was going to speak about cranberries, but there really wasn't enough to fill out a whole class. There is a gentleman who has appointed himself a kosher food advocate. He sends out emails, he put out a website, and he gets people all excited about certain topics. Sometimes he gets them excited, then he backs down a week later, and sometimes whatever. He has declared himself, I don't believe he's a rabbi. I think he found a way to make a business, which, okay, it's a very nice thing. And I'm sure that he does a lot of good. He, on his website, he put an article with a nice-looking rabbi with a real beard and hat and everything. Looks very authentic. And the question which is posed here, I understand there is a halacha of Pas Yisrael. I guess even if you live in Israel, it doesn't have to be Pat Yisrael. It's English, would be Pas Yisrael. Is it true that all bread in Israel is indeed Pas Yisrael? Is bread from non-Jews permitted if there is a hechsher? Is there an issue of Pas Yisrael only relevant in Elul or Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur? I've heard rabbis say during 10 days of penitence we must be strict, but there's no need during the year. Should say if the bread is good and has a good kashrut supervision. So the problem with the answer, and I'm not going to respond to the substance of the answer, the problem is really the tone of the answer. Chazal forbade pastries baked privately by an angel. And a lot of what he says is actually right, and I don't mean really to criticize the words, but he does say over here in big letters, true pas akum is almost never permitted. Okay, so that should really give you an indication of where things are going. So of course that's the problem. What do you mean by true? But before we go any further, and if you want, you can read the article. I can tell you where to find it. But let's take a look if that's really the case, because it could be that among certain authorities, people would have debated that particular point that he mentions here with bold letters and big letters. So let's take a look and let's find out. Look at the first source. Take out your reading glasses. The Elu Dvarim Shel Ovdei Kochavim. This is a Mishnah in the middle of Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah deals with certain relationships with non-Jews. The Elu Dvarim Shel Ovdei Kochavim Asurin. The Ein Isurin Isur Hana. There are certain things which are not allowed, but not like real Avodah Zarah, where there is a prohibition of deriving any benefit. So, for example, Chalav Shechel Vovod Kochavim. The Ein Yisrael Rahu. Do we know anything about that? Yes? We still remember from last week? I just wondered if I could give the same class every week, if anyone would notice. Okay? V'hapat, v'hapat, v'hashemin shelahen. And the other things included is bread of non-Jews, oil of non-Jews. But then the Mishnah adds, just in case you're going to get real nervous about your oil right now, it adds, Rebbe ubeit dino hitiru hashemin. Which means even though the Mishnah comes and says that there was some type of prohibition against bread and against oil and milk, Rebbe and his beit din allowed the shemin. So that leaves us milk we studied. Shemin is now allowed, so we're not going to discuss it. So what are we now left with? We're left with pat akum. So what is pat akum? We have a Mishnah, black and white, that it is absolutely not allowed. The Rambam in source number 2 will give us some information as to why it would not be allowed. V'yesham dvarim acherim asru otam chachamim v'afal pi she'en li'isuran ikar min ha'torah gazru aleim kidei lehitrachek min ha'akum. Certain things were done in order to cause prevent intermarriage, prevent assimilation. Ad shelo yitarvu bahen Yisrael v'yavu le'chatnot, chatnut, in order to prevent exactly the words I said, assimilation and intermarriage. V'eluhen, these are the things that are not allowed. Asru l'shtot imahen, that means alcohol. V'yafilu b'makom she'en l'chush li'yayin nesach, even if there's no consideration of yayin nesach, and maybe we'll come back and talk about that, I haven't decided yet. V'asru l'chol pitan o bishulehen, you're not allowed to eat their bread or food cooked, by a non-Jew. Even though places that you have no concern about kashrut. There's no kashrut concerns over here. But nonetheless, it says that this is not allowed, which means, So therefore, what the Mishnah is telling us, and the Rambam is explaining to us, is that there is a prohibition. This prohibition does not have anything to do with kashrut, even though last week with milk we saw that it had a great deal to do with kashrut. Over here it's telling us that these things are not allowed because they're simply not allowed. The Gemara, though, is going to have some confusion. And it could be that by the time we finish reading the Gemara, we will then be confused as well. The Gemara starts v'hapat. Okay, what about bread? Okay, bread was not the first thing discussed in the Gemara, so it says, okay, let's go to the pot. Amar Rav Kahana Rav Yochanan. Rav Kahana reports in the name of Rav Yochanan. Pot lo hutra bebeitin. Pot was never allowed in the Beitin. Now, why should I say that pot was never allowed in the Beitin? And what does it mean when it says it was never allowed in the Beitin? Does that mean it was allowed someplace else? Or is this simply a comparison to Shemen, because the Mishnah said that Shemen was allowed. What did, again, that last couple, the last phrase in the Mishnah, Rebbe u'beitino hitira Shemen. Rebbe and his beitin did allow Shemen. So what, over here it's saying that this was not allowed. Okay, now why should it have to tell me that it wasn't allowed? I mean, so as I said, it could be a comparison with Shemen, or there may be something else going on. When it says pat lo tur beitin michlal the ikaman deshari, can I therefore deduce from that that somebody did say it's allowed? It was the Beit Din who never said it's allowed, but maybe somebody did say it's allowed. So therefore, when you say, meaning it could have just said that pot was never allowed. Why saying pot was never allowed in the Beit Din? Does that imply that someone else did allow it? And that's the question the Gemara is asking. So that now I'm saying the first stage of confusion has already been presented to us. Has pot been allowed? Has it not been allowed? It wasn't allowed in Beit Din. Did somebody else allow it? Who allowed Shemin? Rebbe did. By the way, it's not really Rebbe, but there's confusion in that as well. But we'll come. It was really Rebbe's grandson who had the same name. Rebbe's grandson's name. Rebbe's name was Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, and his grandson's name was Rebbe Yehuda Nisia. Just to make a little bit of a distinction between the two. So even pot was not really, even Shemen was not really allowed by Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, at least according to the way we understand it. It was Rebbe Yehuda Nisia. So over here, the Gemara says, "Well, let me tell you a story." In, it sounds like it was, Dichi'ata Ravdimi Amar. When Ravdimi traveled, Ki'ata means he arrived. Where did he arrive from? Ravdimi arrived from Israel and brought information to Bavel. Now, part of the whole issue over here is going to be a tension between Bavel versus Eretz Yisrael. But over here, Ravdimi arrives in Bavel and he says, well, let me tell you a story. Now, even the story is going to be confusion because we're going to have a difference of opinion what the story is. But let's read the story now. Pamachat, that's a very good way of starting a story. Once upon a time, Yotze Rebbe L'Sadeh, Rebbe went out to the field. V'hivi oved kachavim l'fanav, pat purani ma'afa se'a, which the English over here translates. He brought before him a loaf baked in a large oven from a se'a, a flour. You know the smell of fresh baked bread, it is very enticing. Right? It's one of the really evil things on this universe. Govat Sha'ul, correct. People that work there, they did a study, they weigh in the average 10 pounds more. I'm just kidding. Anyway. My daughter goes to school around the corner from there. You can smell it all the time. Correct. So what does Rebbe say when they bring him out this fresh baked bread from a non-Jew? Amar Rebbe, kama na'e patzu. Wow, is this nice bread. And then he says, ma ro'u chachamim la'osra. Why in the world do the rabbis ever not allow this? Right? I'm sure you have this kind of experience all the time. You see some pork chops and you say, whoa, what exactly were they thinking? Okay, but that's a little different, because not that they thinking, that's God thinking over here. But over here, he's looking at this saying, wow, what were these rabbis thinking? Did they realize how good this bread looks and smells? Come on. So the Gemara says, ma ro chachamim? What are you talking about what they were thinking? Mishum chatnut, to avoid intermarriage. We don't want you breaking bread with your non-Jews, because who knows where that can lead? That can lead to mixed dancing and all kinds of things, right? Ella ma ro chachamim laosra basada. So he says, no, what he was really asking is, why would the rabbis not allow it in a field? So what's the difference in a field versus a city? Because a field is a place that is isolated. A field is just bread. There's no, his daughter's not there with him. You know, in the bakery, she may be there, or whatever, in his house, she may be there. But he says, it's out there in the field. So from saying this, when Rebbe said, why do the rabbis not allow it in the field? What's he saying about the field? Where the threat of intermarriage or the threat of assimilation wouldn't really occur. What were they thinking when they didn't allow it in the field? The Gemara says, Kisvurim ha'am, when people heard Rebbe say this, they came to a conclusion. They said, Hiti Rebbe hapat. Rebbe allowed bread. What made them think that Rebbe allowed bread? Because he said, what were they thinking? They didn't allow this in the field. So therefore, people came to the conclusion that Rebbe allowed it. Vilohi, but that's just not the case. Rebbe lohi tirat hapat. Rebbe didn't allow bread. So now, when I told you there's confusion, you already see that in the Gemara there's confusion. There's confusion in the time of the Gemara. People at the time thought it was allowed. Was it allowed? Wasn't allowed? Here is our confusion. And so if you want some more confusion, we even have confusion on what the story was. Rabbi Yosef itemer Rav Shmuel ba Yehuda Amar. Rabbi Yosef, and some say it was Rav Shmuel ba Yehuda, said, no, lo kach hoya ma'aseh. That's not the story. That's not the way it happened. Ela Amru, this is what it was. Pam achad halach Rebbe lemakom echad. Once Rebbe traveled, v'ra'a pata dochek l'tamidim. And he saw that his students had no bread. There was no bread to be had. Amar Rebbe, in kan paltar. And Rebbe said, isn't there a baker over here? Kisvurim ha'am lomar. People thought that he meant paltar ovid kachavim. That he meant, isn't there a non-Jewish baker? But what Rebbe really meant is, isn't there a Jewish baker? Which means Rebbe is saying, if there's a bunch of Jews over here, a bunch of Tamidim, a bunch of yeshiva students, didn't anybody think to open up a bakery over here? You're going to make a lot of money. I remember in YU when they opened up the cookie shop right across the street. They did incredible business. They had great brownies and great chocolate chip cookies. It was unbelievable. So obviously they learned this Gemara and said, oh, we got a lot of students over here, open up a bakery. So over here, again, we have confusion. What's the confusion? I think it was Grandma's Cookies. I think that's what it was called. And over here you have confusion. What was the confusion? Did Rebbe imply that, why didn't, you know, isn't there a baker implying even a non-Jewish baker? And Rebbe really meant a Jewish baker. But over here, again, we have Rebbe said something. And here's an argument of the Gemara, what Rebbe really meant. So this, as I said, gets a little confusing. Amar Rav Chelbo, you know, Rav Chelbo is independent of Rebbe, lives far after Rebbe. Rav Chelbo, you know, he concludes, Afilu lamanda amar paltar ovid kachavim. And even if the opinion is correct that what Rebbe really meant, so now you just see it's backing down. He says, no, he meant this. But Rebbe Chelbo says, but even if you say that he meant that a non-Jewish baker is okay, lo amran ela deleka palta Yisrael. The only time that Rebbe allowed it is if there's no Jewish baker around. Now we just got to a whole nother level of discussion, because what did Rebbe Chelbo just now say? That there are those who are of the opinion that you can eat from a non-Jewish baker when, if there's no baker around. Avamokim de'ika palti Yisraelo, but if there's a Jewish baker, then you can't do it. For Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afilu manda omar palti ovid kachavim, but even if you're going to say that you can eat from a non-Jewish baker, hani mili besada, which means he took both stories and threw them together. Because that's only in the field you can do this, where there's no problem of intermarriage, well, but ear low, but certainly not in a city, mishum chatnut, because of intermarriage. The Gemara then gives an interesting conclusion. Lo tishta'u minai de ibu de ka'ochel lachma de aramai. There was somebody named Ibu, who was actually the father of one of the Amorayim, and it says that Rav Nachman Yitzchak said, don't speak to him, because he eats pat akum. So over here, and it's interesting that, you know, that's the conclusion over here, that he's eating. So here you have a wonderful Gemara, which is absolutely confusing when you read this Gemara. By the time you finish this Gemara, do you now know more than you knew before we started, or do you know far less than you knew before you started? So what's going to happen now? Now the Rishonim are going to have to start trying to make sense of this and say, okay, so what is the halacha? So let's take a look at what Rishonim do with this. Rashi in source 4 points out about it's Rabbi Yehuda Nesiya and not really Rebbe. Okay, that's what I already told you. Logar sinan de halav ihu sharia el Rabbi Yehuda Nesiya bar berei sharia. It wasn't Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, it was his grandson, the son of his son, Rabbi Yehuda Nesiya. He was the one who allowed it, and he goes and he proves that later on. The Rif in source number 5 introduces another element. Another tradition that we haven't heard of yet. And the reason we haven't heard it is because it wasn't in the Gemara. Not only is it not in the Gemara, it's not in that Gemara, it's not in any Gemara, at least any Babylonian Gemara, but it's in the Yerushalmi. So the Yerushalmi has another tradition. Remember I told you that part of this whole issue is the tension between Eretz Yisrael versus Bavel. So the Rif, in source 5, quotes the Yerushalmi. He first quoted it regarding Shemin and other things, and now he comes back to the Yerushalmi regarding Pat. Pat, Rabbi Yaakov, b'shem Rabbi Yonatan, Omer, Pat mehalachot shel im'um. Now, what does the word im'um mean? Where are my Hebrew speakers?
Unclear.
Unclear. Exactly. So now, on top of all our other lack of clarity, what does the Yerushalmi say about this halacha? It says the halacha is a very confusing halacha. It's not clear. Uvamakom she'ein pat Yisrael mitzuyin, and any place where there is no pat Yisrael, bidinhu she'tehe pat ovdei kochavim isura, the real law should be that it should not be allowed. Why should that be the real law? Based on what? Based on the Mishnah. V'im amu aleha, but they challenged this. They murmured, they challenged, they didn't like it. V'hitirua m'pnei chayei nefesh. And it got back down. It was allowed. Who allowed it? Which Beit Din allowed it? Where this is allowed, that doesn't say. It was allowed m'pnei chayei nefesh. Now, what does chayei nefesh mean over here? You could say that chayei nefesh means life and death. What chayei nefesh means, it's not what it means here. Chayei nefesh means that bread is considered to be a staple. Bread is a staple of life. Our meals are such that we probably eat much less bread than they did in those days. In those days, 80% of what they were eating were bread, and they would dip it into something, but bread was the meal, and everything else would just give the bread taste. We can go through a whole meal, we can go through all week, from Shabbos to Shabbos, without necessarily washing or eating bread, but that was implausible in those days. In those days, they would make a pot of some kind of muck, and they would dip, they would, don't worry, I say this sometimes at home, I said, did you make muck for dinner? They would dip the bread in this muck, and that's what they would end up eating. So if there was no bread, then they would have no food. So it says, m'pnei chayei nefesh, for a consideration, which means it's very nice to have a rabbinic law, don't eat this because of intermarriage. It's another thing to have no food. So therefore, because of chayei nefesh, they allowed it. Rabbanan de Kesari. Who were the rabbanan of Kesari? The rabbis, the rabbinate of Kesaria. B'shem Rabbi Yaakov, they said, that's the halacha. The halacha is you're allowed to eat it, but they did one consideration. What's the consideration? Let it be from a baker. Now, what do they mean, let it be from a baker? And not from whom? And not from a private house. Which means the way that the Yerushalmi concludes is that again, it should not be allowed because the Mishnah says it's not allowed, but this is chayei nefesh, this is a staple, this is necessary, so therefore it is allowed. But when is it allowed? It's allowed if it comes from a baker, which means, according to the conclusion of the Rishalmi, you want to go to your non-Jewish bakery, you live in a place, or for that matter, you want to buy in a supermarket bread which is not baked by a Jew, but it says that it's kosher on it, the ingredients are all that it's kosher, but it's not baked by a Jew, and if there's no kosher bakery around, so what the Yerushalmi says, okay, you can buy it. But what shouldn't you do? You shouldn't go to your next-door neighbor and eat bread, break bread with them in their house, or take bread directly from them, because that causes some type of familiarity, that causes a connection which is against the spirit of what the halacha wants over here. It could be every food. So if you want, we'll get to other foods. But bread specifically, because bread was such a staple, bread specifically was something which they made a law against. But what do the rabbis from Caesarea conclude? That because of chayei nefesh it's allowed, and let's allow it whenever we're talking about a baker. So that's the conclusion from that's the conclusion of the Yerushalmi. But who brings this Yerushalmi lahalacha? The Rif does. So as you know, the Rif is considered to be a pretty important posek. Yes. Non-kosher is a separate issue. That's a separate issue, right? Yes, that's a separate issue. Yes, they do. That's a separate issue. The Rambam said, we're not talking about the kosher concerns right now. Kosher is another concern. If it's not kosher, you can't eat it. There's nothing to talk about. There's nothing.
Here it's only the case where you know exactly what they put in.
Right. Okay, to get another opinion, let's take a look at the Ritva. The Ritva is a little long over here. We'll see how much of this you have patience for. Michlal de'ikaman de'shari in de'chi'ata in, de'chi'ata rabdimi, and so on. That's the Gemara. Ika l'meida k'tuva, we can conclude from the Gemara, hechamuchach mehani uvda de'ikaman de'shari. We can conclude that there really is somebody who allowed it. Shari ein kan elamasha because, but the reality is, it's not that anybody allowed it. We're going back to the Bavli, not what we saw from the rabbis in Caesarea. The Ritva says that the only people that allowed it were the people who made a mistake in what Rebbe thought. Now, by the way, that's not really true, necessarily. Why? Because later on in the Gemara of Chelbo didn't necessarily say that. What he's saying is that when we had the two stories of Rebbe, what did we conclude? It was only the people that made a mistake were the ones that thought it was allowed. Va'od, harei ha-Talmud savach va'amar, v'lohi. The Talmud, the Gemara screamed. Okay, I don't know if you heard it screaming or not. He hears the Gemara screaming. The Gemara screamed and said, v'lohi, lohi to Rebbe tapad. Rebbe did not allow this. This is a mistake. V'yesh apirish melchal de'ikaman desav deshuriya bebeitin, v'mai, in the chiyata. And there are people who could have thought it was allowed in Beit Din, but why? I mean, the Gemara seems to say no. Lefi zeh ein lanu shum heter bipat shel goyim. By the way, this sounds more like what I read to you in the beginning. There is absolutely no opinion that allows you to eat the bread from non-Jews. Lo b'divrei Rabbi Chalbo, v'lo b'divrei Rabbi Yochanan, ki kol divreim b'mashe sover ma'am lomar, v'zeh dat hara'ah ha-levi. It says hara'ah ha-levi. This is the opinion of the Ra'ah ha-levi that non-Jewish bread is not allowed. That is the conclusion of the Talmud Bavli. And they were discussing, anybody who discussed it was allowed, were discussing what people thought was allowed, but it was not allowed. So over here, you have very clearly the Ra'ah Levi going against what the Rif concluded. Because what did the Rif conclude? What did the Rif really do? I'm sorry for going backwards, but what did the Rif really do? The Rif came to the conclusion that the Talmud Bavli is very confusing. I think we all came to that conclusion. So what other conclusion did he get to? The Yerushalmi is not confusing. So if you have a Bavli which is confusing, and you have a Yerushalmi which is equivocal, so what conclusion do you get to? You follow the opinion which is clear, and that's really what the Rif did over here. The Ra'ah Levi, however, says no. Looking at the Bavli, I don't see any reason to allow it. V'docha gam kein Yerushalmi shivi Rav Alfasi. And he rejects the Yerushalmi which the Rif, Rav Alfasi, the Rif brings. That means that he claims the Yerushalmi follows what the people thought. Hold it a second. I mean, you understand why he's saying that. He's saying, we follow the Talmud Bavli. As far as the Talmud Bavli is concerned, the only people who think it's allowed are the common folk who don't understand what really is going on. On the other hand, what did we see in the Yerushalmi? This happens to be the chief rabbinate of Caesarea who comes to this conclusion. So over here, the Ra'ah Levi is rejecting, the Ritva is telling you he's rejecting the Rif, he's rejecting the Yerushalmi. He says, no, it doesn't hold. And therefore, there are among our rabbis who say that it's not allowed, nothing to talk about. And that's what you conclude from reading Rebbe. Now, I didn't read for you this Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, we concluded he was the one who allowed shemen. The Gemara tells us people said to him, whoa, you're already allowing things, allow bread for us. And what did he say? If I do this, then I'll get attacked. People will think that I allow everything. And so over here, the fact that Yehuda Nisiya wouldn't allow it, so now what do I conclude? That it's still not allowed. And so he's bringing proof from that as well. Ve'ein lanu heter ela medivrei Yerushalmi bilvad. The only place you can discern a lenient approach is by learning the Yerushalmi. She'nimnu alav achronim, And that's what's relied upon by a lot of the later authorities. When he says Achronim, when the Ritva says Achronim, he doesn't mean Rav Akiva Eiger, because he lived 500 years before. He means among his time period, there's a lot of people who allow it, which is also an interesting admission that we will get to as we move on. V'yitrurim yishum chayi nefesh. And why they allow it? Because it's staple. But then he gives another reason why they allowed it. V'kevun da halacha rofefet hi. It's also a very weak law. V'gzera she'ein rov atzibu yuchulim lamodba. And on top of everything else, it's a gzera that people can't live with. And by the way, those of you who are now experts in halacha after 2.5 years, you know that if there's a gzera that the tzibur can't live with, that gets canceled. So the Ritva just now gave us 3 good reasons, even though his whole tone has been why it's not allowed. He's so sure that it's not allowed, it's the why are people nonetheless lenient. So the truth is they're relying on the Rishami, but he's saying there's another point here, that it's a law which is rofefet. It's a law which, as you saw, the Rishami also said, it's things that people complained against. It's something which people never accepted. It's chayi nefesh, and you throw all these things together. Then he says, after all that, kedai hu Yerushalmi b'zeh l'smoch alav, because it's such a weak law, and it's a gzeresh that tzibur can't stand with, so you can end up relying on the Yerushalmi. V'nir sh'ein zederech ha-ga'onim. He goes, nonetheless, a lot of early authorities did not follow that approach. V'lo derech ha-tosfot. And it's also not the approach that Tosfot went. Shekulu mitiru pacho pal togoi, who allowed it, and we'll come to Tosfot soon, Gam Kedivra of Yochanan, Kedivra of Chelbo, that they did follow of Yochanan of Chelbo. If you remember, that was the end of the Gemara. Gam T'mahani Ma'od Heichel Shaklu V'Torah of Yochanan of Chelbo L'Farish Mahata'ut Hadat Shus from Amlomer. He goes, I don't understand the end of the Gemara where Rav Chelbo and Rav Yochanan are discussing the mistaken understanding of the people. Which, by the way, may be an indication that both Rav Chelbo and Rav Yochanan don't necessarily think it's a misunderstanding, and maybe they know something else. But okay, va'ayin va'od the doctor Rav Yochanan b'lishn lomer lo. Okay, va'nochun be'enai, and he goes, this is what it seems to me. Ki b'yemei ha'amoraim nahagu heter b'pat palter shel goyim. He goes, already in the time of the Amoraim, people were lenient with the bread of a baker. By the way, what does that fall in line with? The conclusion of the rabbis from Caesarea, the Yerushalmi, that he doesn't like. But he's now telling me something else. He's saying the historical reality is that people from the time of the Amoraim, the time of the Gemara, were lenient. And that's what it says, that this bread that people are lenient with, lo hitru bebeitin. Why did he have to come and say the beitin didn't allow it? Because people are lenient. Ella ha'achronim hitiru b'nei chayi nefesh. Later people allowed it because of chayi neshev. V'tolu ha'heter, and they based the heter, b'mashe sovrim ha'am lomer b'divri rebi. Shetiru nogu alav heter. V'afo pi shehoya minhag b'ta'ut, hora'a leit lanba. So this is fascinating. People misunderstood Rebbe and were lenient. Bottom line, people were lenient. Why are they lenient? So he's saying it could be because they misunderstood Rebbe. Rabbis then paskened like people's misunderstanding because people are doing it. But therefore he says, it was never allowed in a Beit Din, so why was it allowed? Because people thought it was allowed. But what else do we conclude? That people did it. So here you have a wonderful example of people that are doing something, which, again, according to the Ritva, is wrong. But nonetheless, people are doing it. What's it based on? It's based on a minag tod. It's based upon a misunderstanding. It's based on what they thought Rebbe said. But nonetheless, that's what was done. Daha tamuda pat gezera she'ein rov atzibu yuchulam mod bahi. He goes, and if that's the case, then what does it come down to? And now he's repeating himself. It's a gzera that people can't live with. And that's why they went to Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya and said, please allow it. Why? Because everyone's doing it. There's a law on the books, and no one's following the law on the books. So they say to Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, allow it. Why allow it? Because we're not following it anyway. All of us are eating it. He goes, if I do it, they'll call me a lenient beitin. Halav hachi hayamatir lahem. Had it not been for that consideration, he would have allowed it. And that must be for the reason we said, the same reason for oil. But if it was a law, just like, why do they allow the oil? Because people couldn't live with it. They couldn't live with it because they couldn't live their lives like this. He says, if that's the case, that it's if it's a gzera that a tzibur can't live with, what's the conclusion? You don't need a Beit Din to allow it. And therefore, now it's almost like he's backtracking. What he called before Minag Tod, he goes, you don't need, it's not really Minag Tod. There was nobody who allowed it, but he goes, but why don't I need anybody to allow it? Because he's saying that people didn't accept it in the first place. And the whole thing comes down to they were concerned about the honor of the Beit Din that disallowed it. If we ignore them, what happened to their honors? They wanted another Beit Din to allow it, so it wouldn't be disrespectful. Meaning, instead of just ignoring the first decree, right, maybe better to cancel the decree. Skip a little bit. And the fact that everybody's doing it too loud. That the heter is not a clear one, it's very not clear. Nonetheless, nimno lav hitiru nechai nefesh ubavad min apalter ad kan. Basically, he's saying that it didn't have to be allowed by Yehuda Nisiya. It was already allowed. Why was it allowed? Because people never accepted it. So we learned a lot of things over here in this Ritva. We learned all the reasons that it shouldn't be allowed, and then we learned a bunch of reasons why it should be allowed. But what's interesting about the Ritva is, again, the Ritva is from a Sephardic background, right? There was a Halevi as well as. And now we're going to get the Mordechai. And the Mordechai is going to begin our journey into the world of Tosfot. When we get to the world of Tosfot, we will see perhaps a different world. Hani mila deleka palti Yisrael v'chein matzati shehetir rav shmaria patshel ovid yachav v'lemisha holech baderech. He goes, first of all, Rav Shmaria, one of the authorities, allowed it if you're traveling. So what happened to this absolutist? If you're traveling, it's allowed. Why should it be allowed? So apparently he's saying is that the gzera is not a gzera when you're traveling. Why? I won't discuss it. I won't argue. I'm just saying right away he's giving you a reason to allow it. When you're home and you're settled and once you're traveling, you can edit. That's the first heter that he brings. Next in the third line, Ravi Ha'ezri, which is the Ravya, Kotav Perakets Mavrachan, to Af Bayit, even in your home. Im Heseva L'Shulchan Yisrael, Ha'ochel Pachel Ovid Kachavim, Upat Nikiya B'yado, V'abal Bayit Nizharmi Pachel Ovid Kachavim, Kevim Shemitzvah Zum Mutelet, Alav Lavsoa Yivtsa Ala Yafe, V'rayu Mishalmi, Pat Nikiya Tmeo, Pat Kibir Tahora, Al Eze Mehen Shiyirtsa Yivtsa, What in the world did he just now say? If you have in your house bread which is from an Ovid Kochavim, Pat Akum, and you also have bread which is nice kosher bread, but the Pat Akum is nicer, and when you make a motzi, it would be a mitzvah to use the nicer bread. Right? You have two pieces of bread. How do you know which one you should use Friday night, which one you should use on Shabbos? So what's the answer? The one which is nicer you should use first, because you do a mitzvah with something which is nicer. So that's what the Gemara says. Now what if the nicer one is Pat Akum? So he says, so you use the nicer one. He goes, and once you're allowed to use it for the motzi, then you can use it for the meal as well. Now hold it. Now what just now happened? He just now said, yeah, it's something to avoid, or we didn't even hear it's something to avoid, but all things being equal, don't use Pat Akum. But what if things are not equal? What if the Pat Akum is nicer? Use it. So that's the second thing which is real interesting. Let's continue. V'rayim Yerushalmi. One second, we did that. Where it's underlined now. V'gam yishsomchin ahad deka amr b'Yerushalmi piton v'hilchot shel imumhu u'masek v'makum she'en pat yisro mitzuya imum alav v'hitura. And from the Yerushalmi we can conclude any place that did not have pat Yisrael, they complained and they allowed it. So it seems that it's allowed, but not if there's kosher bread around. Okay. V'nira sheyesh l'smoch al haytana the amarav simlai l'Rav Yehuda nesiyah b'yameinu tatira tapat amur lei imkain korli bedina sharia, which you're already familiar with now. Rav Yehuda nesiyah allowed mashma d'mlav hachi hayomatiro, that he would have allowed it k'moshe tira t'shemin, as he allowed shemin v'imkain lo pashadi surah b'klal Yisrael. If that's the case, and listen carefully to what he says here, if that's the case when they're saying allow it, he concludes that the Isser was never spread. This Isser was never accepted in certain places. Now listen to his next line. Va'anu, the Mordechai says, living in Europe, says, mi mekomot o mi oton ha-mekomot shelo pashat isuro. We come from places that this Isser was never accepted. Did you hear what he just now said? By the way, so much for this line across the board and saying, no, it's almost never allowed. You just now heard the Mordechai saying, we never accepted it. Jews in Ashkenaz never accepted the prohibition. How's that for an opinion? But by the way, one of the things that you need to think about is something which I've told you in the past, and that is spheres of influence. The practice in Bavel had direct influence on the practice in Sephardic countries because of trade routes. The practice in Europe was more often than not direct from Eretz Yisrael and not impacted by Bavel, which means that certain things which were done in Europe are not new minhagim from the Middle Ages, but it's so interesting how he's saying it here. We follow what was done in Israel. Just to embellish this a little bit, Caesarea is a port city. The customs of Caesarea would have gone directly to Europe. So people in Europe would follow the customs of what were done in Caesarea. The rabbiner of Caesarea rules in this particular way. They may follow it, but it's more than that. What he's saying is that there are places which they never accepted the prohibition to begin with. Not even the leniency of Caesarea, where they said, you know, you can use from a baker. He's not saying you can use from a baker. What he's saying over here is that this was not accepted in some places, and we come from the communities that it was not accepted. Didn't he have like a... Well, Britain...
My daughter married a son of a conservative family, not even by jam in the supermarket, because he grew up in America, and in America he
was. Well, in many ways, Britain is still like the Middle Ages. Okay. Sheharei anu noagin bo heter ve'ein sarach heter beitin. Only in the places where they accepted the prohibition. Then you really need to be counted and you need a beitin. We don't need anything to allow it. We never accepted it. There's also, he quotes Yerushalmi here at the end, which talks about buying bread from a non-Jew after Pesach. How can you buy bread from an non-Jew after Pesach? It's parakum. So he says, no. Yerushalmi says, you're allowed to buy the bread after Pesach. So the fact that it said you can buy his bread, that means that we're not concerned about parakum. So he brings from a side point another consideration. So the Mordechai just now is pretty interesting, just in case you think this is a lone voice in the wilderness. Tosfot, again, pretty authoritative in source number 8, on the same line of the Gemara, Miklal de'ik laman de'shari. It sounds like somebody allows it. The prohibition, it never spread. Umikan samchu ata, and therefore now, today, in Europe, le'echol patshel ovdi kechavim kevan shelo pashat isur b'kol Yisrael. We never accepted this prohibition. So now you see why I didn't love what was written there in the beginning. If we'll just skip for a second to source 11, which I don't know why got thrown back over here. It's the Rush. So if we already got the Mordechai, we already got Tosfot, we already got the Rif, so let's the Rush weigh in. And the truth is, there's no reason reading it, because he says almost the exact same things. Amar of Kahana, Amar of Yochanan, Lutra Beit, Mechlad, Ikaman, Deshari, Pat, Rav Yaakov, B'Shem, Rav Yochanan, and he quotes the Yerushalmi over here, the rabbis from Caesarea. Look at the bottom of the page. Lahachika Amar Rav Yochanan Lohut Rav Beitin V'Makomot Shanahagubo Heter Lo Pashat Shem Yisuro. Places that it's allowed, the prohibition was never accepted. And therefore the great rabbis established, they said, therefore they never told people in their countries not to eat it. But by the way, you notice this? We keep hearing all of the Rishonim and Ashkenaz saying, this was, we just never really accepted it. They live from places that this was not accepted. This thing... Turn the next page, again where it's underlined. Uberov mekomod pizureinu, ein paltar Yisrael matzoi. Interesting historical observation. In most places in our diaspora, there is no kosher bakery. Vahavi kamo hatanash shlosha yamim, uvgam yusham shakal el kamar she imemu alav yitur bnei chai nefesh mekom she ein pat Yisrael matzoi. I mean, but you again see the direction that he's going in. It's pretty similar to other things that we've seen. Let's look in the Shulchan Aruch, in source number 10. Just maybe before that, source number 9 is just interesting. It's about to be quoted in source number 10. The Rashba was asked a question, when you buy, what if you want to buy non-kosher bread from your local priest who's not married, doesn't have any kids, so maybe there's no problem of intermarriage. He goes, no, it's still a problem. Okay? There are those who discuss it, but most likely, if it's right, but if it's because of intermarriage, then it doesn't make a difference. Okay, source number 10, Shulchan Aruch. Asru chachamim lechol pat shel amamim of dekochavim mishum chatnut vefil b'makom toleka mishum chatnut asur. That's the Rashbi you just saw. V'lo asru elo pat shel chamishim minei dagan aval pat shel kitniot v'shel oriz v'dochan enu b'chlal pat Stam sha'asru, v'gam enu asur mishum bishuliv v'chavim, and so on. Says, what is the isur of pat akum? Something made out of the five grains. Next, bet. Yesh makomot, this is the Mechaber, not just the Ramah telling Ashkenazim, what Ashkenazim do, the Mechaber is speaking. Yesh makomot shmekilim b'davar, v'lochin pat mi nachtum, that means a baker, ha'ovid kochavim, v'mokom she'en shem nachtum Yisrael. So who does that follow? The rabbis from Caesarea. Even though we saw those who didn't like it, like the Ritva, he brings it down. He says, "Why? It's difficult, so therefore you're allowed to buy bread from those who say that." And some say, even if there is a kosher baker around. By the way, what would be the logic of this if there was never prohibition? If there's never prohibition, then why can't I buy it even if there is a kosher bakery around? So now you see the extreme opinions that were brought in Tosfot that maybe at the time you thought were really extreme. Guess what? The Mechaber brings them down and says, that's fine. That's a legitimate approach. Aval patsha balabatim ein sham misha moriba lahakel. But when it comes to the bread of the balabatim, that's where he draws the line, by the way, so far, until he backs down on that. That balabat, what? Which means from your next door neighbor, which means from a baker, which is impersonal, versus your next door neighbor. She'ikur exer mishum chatnut ve'im yochal pat balabatim yavol lasod etzlam. And if you're going to start sharing bread, you can end up eating with them. And then he gets into a little definition: what's considered balabatim, whether it was made to sell or made to eat. Yeah.
If the problem is intermarriage, what difference does it make if it's from chamishit minei dagan or if it's from kidney?
The prohibition over here is only prohibition of bread. Bread is defined by the five grains, because otherwise it's not bread. It's like saying, what if I made a prohibition against the yayin? What about drinking apple juice? Well, apple juice is not yayin. So over here, what is the definition of bread? Which, by the way, you don't know yet what the definition of bread is. Okay, the only thing he's told you so far is definition of bread is something made out of five grains. It's made out of rice. It's not bread. It's mush. Stam yenum
is because of intermarriage,
and it applies to wine. You say, well, it should be by grape juice. It should be by apple juice, or orange juice. No, it's specifically pat akum is by pat, and if it's made out of, you can call it rice bread, you can call it corn bread, you can call all kinds of things. He's telling us what is the definition of bread: five grains, bezel. Next, halacha sif dalid. So we're skipping a little bit. Malkum she'ein palti Yisrael matzui, if there's no Jewish bakery around, l'data matirin, l'kach pat paltar v'kachavim, y'gir shem palta Yisrael, haray pat paltar v'kachavim, asura ad shimkor palti Yisrael pito, l'achar shekala pat Yisrael, chazru pito shel v'kachavim l'achshiro. So he says that there are those who say that you're allowed to eat from a non-Jewish person only if there's no Jewish person. What if a Jewish person shows up? So then you have to stop buying the other stuff until the Jewish bakery has sold out, and then you can buy the other one. Sif hei, yesh omrim, mi sheyesh biyado pat, o sheyesh palter Yisrael. Some say, if you have bread, or if there's a kosher bakery, v'yesh palter v'kachovim, o sepat yofemi menu, but the non-Jewish bakery makes nicer bread. Do you remember we saw something about this before? Some say if you makes nicer bread, oh, mi min acher she'ein biyado shel palter, he makes rye bread, and you can only get, you know, regular wheat. Mutar liknot mi palter v'chachovim malkum shenagur heter v'pat shel palter. The people that allow the palter, once you allow that heter, you're allowed to do it even to buy nicer bread. That's considered, which is why it's interesting, because, you know, we started before chayei nefesh, and now you're saying chayei nefesh is not exactly that you're going to drop dead. He has nicer bread. You like the bread that he makes. It tastes better. He over here, again, the Mechaber brings a heter on that. You like it more. It's considered more special. That's considered to be a makom dahuk. So again, some of these definitions now are also becoming crystallized. Vav. I'm not going to get into all this because this is going to get you all upset because this is going to take you to a whole new place. He's telling you that included in pot is something made out of the five grains, but including his pot is cake.
Is what?
Cake. Because you start talking about mixing eggs in and doing other things over here, cake is included. I'll give you the very simple definition. There's something which is called pot haba b'kisnin. Pat haba bikisnin, which means bread which has a kind of a pocket in it. What is it? It used to be real bread, and it should be a motzi. You know, maybe we'll do a whole thing so you can understand this better, but I'm just going to explain it in this context. Pat haba bikisnin would be regular dough that you did something else with. There's three different opinions what it is. We're actually machmir for all three. One opinion would be pizza. What bracha do you make on pizza? Do you make a mizono? Do you make a motzi on pizza? So what is it? It's dough. But what do you do with the dough? You put cheese in your tomato sauce, or maybe even extra cheese on it, but it's probably fattening. Anyway, and even mushrooms on it.
French toast.
Leave French toast for a second. So you baked bread with cheese and tomato sauce on it. So is that bread or it's not bread? So that's called pat haba bikisnin. It originally was bread, but it loses its status of bread, because bread was eaten by dipping it into muck. That's what makes it into bread. So here's bread, which is non-functional bread. So here you're not kovei asuda on it, so therefore if you have one bite of it, you don't have to wash remotes. You have a little bit of this, you have a little bit of apple pie, it would be the same thing. It would be pat haba bikisnin. But what happens then if you use it as bread? How do you use bread? You kovei asuda on bread. So therefore, if you take the pat haba bikisnin and you kovei asuda on it, guess what? It just now became bread again. So therefore, pat haba bikisnin is bread that loses its definition of bread because of the way that it was prepared, but if you use it as bread, the motzi reverts back to it. Okay? So therefore, cake would actually be one of the cases of pat haba bikisnin. If you sit and eat a whole cake, or a certain amount of cake, you would just now kovei asuda on it. Normal people, no offense, normal people are not kovei, meaning pat haba bikisnin lost its status of bread. It's special bread. It's bread which you don't use as bread. But if you use bread, if there's bread that you don't use as bread, that you now use as bread, it just now became bread again. Now the question is, bread that you don't use as bread, is it considered bread as far as pat akum goes? Guess what the answer is? Yes. Yes. So it's not just the bread from the next door neighbor, it's also the apple pie from the next door neighbor is included. And that's what just now happened in Sif Hay over here that we didn't read inside. I will explain why this is important as we go on. Look at the very bottom. Look at Sifchet. Yesh misha omed b'malkum she'ein paltar mitzui klal mutar afilu shabalabatim. So now we've gone full circle. Even before he said, but not balabatim, Yeah, so now he even comes back and says, what if there's no bread around, then you can even use from the balabatim, which now just take the whole thing and threw it away. And by the way, the logic for this should be very simple. The rabbis made a gzera. The gzera is to avoid intermarriage. It's when all things are equal, we have the gzera. But what if all things are not equal? What if you have no bread? So bread's considered chai nefesh. The only bread you have is from the next door neighbor. So that would consider to be a good enough reason to break the rabbinic law, at least according to these opinions. Now, you've seen more opinions today than you know what to do with. Am I right about this? And right, we've seen what? No, because it has nothing to do with this topic. It has to do with the topic of Bishul Akum, and then I'll be very happy to discuss it. Okay, with Bishul Akum, there's an issue of Ole Shulchan Malachim. This is strict. This is more strict, because this is even if it's not Ole Shulchan, there's still a prohibition theoretically. So what did we see so far? We have a mission that says it's not allowed. We have a Gemara that says. No one ever, and no Beit Din ever allowed it. So hold it a second. Did somebody allow it? We had Rabbi Yehuda Nasi who went for a tiul off in the Sadeh, and right, wow, how gorgeous is this bread, and why did we ever not allow it? Well, hold it. Did he just allow it? Did he not allow it? What's going on over here? Well, maybe he never said it there. Maybe he went to visit his yeshiva students, and he said, well, it's a shame there's no bakery over here. Was that a kosher bakery or non-kosher bakery? And we had the full confusion from the Gemara. We then had the Rishalmi that says, you know what, this was a pretty weak law to begin with, and there are certain people allowed it, they certainly allowed a bakery, and that was the conclusion, at least, of the rabbis in Caesarea, that if you have a non-kosher baker, it's allowed, because that's not really the consideration of intermarriage, because this is a professional, he's not intermarrying with everybody he sells bread to, he's selling bread to them. So that was that was really the way that concluded. We then saw, among the Rishonim, those who were very strict and said, well, our Gemara never allowed it, and who cares what the Rishalmi says, and we saw people said, you know what, we never accepted this. We never accepted it. There's no prohibition. And now you see the language of the Beis Yosef, of the Machaber, of Yosef Karo, the Beis Yosef. You see his language, and you realize that he's really playing it very safe over here. He's saying that if you accept the law, if you don't accept the law, and people go this way, and people go that way, and he's being very undecisive in the way he's writing the law, and you come to the conclusion over here that it's really not as simple as you think. The halacha is that we are lenient on Pat Akum. That is the halacha. We are lenient in Pat Akum. We would eat bread from a non-kosher bakery, assuming that the bread is, in fact, kosher. A non-Jewish bakery, assuming that it's kosher. Assuming that it's kosher. If you look in the Taz in number 12, he says there are people that are make a why. Lefish exerit apat lonit vashet b'kol amokot b'shashagazru lebi mei atanayim. It was never accepted. Which means, yeah, somebody got up and said in the Mishnah, this is not allowed, and people didn't accept it. It was never accepted from the beginning. The Chachmat Adam, who's the Chai Adam, who was a Rav in Vilna a couple hundred years ago in Source 15, he says that it did not spread to our places because this was something which we needed, and you can use from the baker. He then quotes that there are some people who are even lenient if there is, you know, kosher bakery around. And at the very end he writes, where it's underlined, Aval bal nefesh ra'ui li zaher kevan sheyesh pat Yisrael matzui im lo sheyof mishel Yisrael. He goes, if there's non-kosher bread and it's not any, and it's not better than bread from a non-Jewish person, and it's not nicer than from the Jewish bakery, it's better to avoid it. But by the way, I think that's a very good sentiment. It's better to avoid it. And there are other issues involved as well, supporting Jewish establishments and so on and so forth. But even he says it's worthwhile. Rav Moshe has a tshuva, which is not relevant to most of what we're talking about over here. He was asking about buying bagels. Can you go to H&H and buy bagels? Which I tried last week. But on Sunday morning, there was a line out the door around the block, and therefore...
I don't know what
it is. It's okay, in Manhattan. I tried. I was there last week. I didn't see you. You were probably online.
I went to Cafe Cage. I'm 48.
So, and he writes at the end, Rav Moshe, V'lechein ein lasur habegel, l'rov b'nei adam, hanogin heter pat shel akum palter. He says, most people allow this, so therefore Rav Moshe says you could go to H&H, because most people, why? Because H&H makes better bagels. If they make better bagels, do I have to go to the place... to the kosher baker that makes bagels? No, they make better bagels, so therefore it's allowed. People, they make the best. Okay, when are we going? She just invited me, right? You heard that?
Yes, it's your birthday.
let's just get to a couple of more considerations. 18 is something you heard along the way, you heard in the very beginning in the question. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Af mi she'enu nizar b'pachal kutim, b'seriti mechuva tzarech lizar. All year round, we're not careful about this. Aseret Yimei Tshuva, we are careful about it. And that, again, I'm just telling you that's a fascinating thing. It's like we're going to fool God during Aseret Yimei Tshuva. Look, you know, no, it's that even though there are all these reasons to allow it, Aseret Yimei Tshuva, we try to be on our best behavior. The Mishnah Berurah writes, Hainu afilu mipat paltu shel goy, v'im einu yochol la'afot ba'atzmo, yechshir atanur, shofen bo'akum. Is there anything else here that I want to read? Yeah, around in the middle of it, he writes.
It's interesting that none of them mentioned the fact that it may not be kosher.
No, right. We're assuming it's kosher. Right. Okay, and you can read the rest of the Mishnah Berurah when you want to. In source number 20, listen, I had to do something to bother you and give you guilt because I till now I've been too nice to you today. In Hilchot Shabbat, the Shulchan Aruch writes as follows. This is the Ramah, in source 20. Noagin lalush kidei shi'ur chala b'bayit. Lasot min l'chamim l'vitzor aleim b'shabbat v'yom tov. The custom is to make bread and to make enough bread that you'll have to take chala, right? You know, women have a mitzvah of lighting candles, and there's also a mitzvah of taking chala. So he says the custom is to bake before Shabbat and to break before Yom Tov enough that you can separate challah. That you should put yourself in the situation of doing it. He goes, v'hu mikavod Shabbat v'Yom Tov v'ein l'shanot. He goes, and that's the custom. That's what one should do. The Mishnah Berurah in Source 21 writes, Hainu mavad elisha v'afi v'hu b'chlal kavod Shabbat v'Yom Tov k'mo shemaseim l'sof. V'ayin ba'achronim, he quotes the Magen Avraham L'chayadim and others, the afilu hanogin lechol palter she'enu Yisrael b'chol, even those of us who are lenient all week to eat bread from a non-Jewish bakery, mikol makom b'Shabbat v'yom tov, nachon lizor shelo lechol ki imipat Yisrael, b'mnei kavod Shabbat v'yom tov. That out of honor for Shabbat and Yom Tov, nonetheless, we will get bread from a kosher bakery. And all of you now remember that when you were young or you were living wherever you grew up, that all week you did buy bread in the regular supermarket, but for Shabbos, you went and bought bread from the kosher bakery. If there was one. But why did he do that? So now you understand. That's what the Achronim told people to do. Which means, here's a law that I think most people did, and they don't necessarily know why they did it. So now we're saying, the Mishnah Berurah writes it back black and white. He doesn't even say that I made this up myself. He's saying, no, this is what the Achronim said to do. All week, be lenient, but on Shabbat, for Shabbat, do it. And but even for Shabbat, he's, you know, not terribly... Even Shabbat, he's saying, it's better not to go to bakery at all. Why? It's better to make your own. Look at source 23. We'll skip 22 for a second. V'hu michvot Shabbat. This is the Mishnah Berurah in his Biur Halacha, where he explains things a little bit more in depth. V'yesh l'zerem nekot v'yom b'shiv v'hichinu et asher yaviu et asher tofu afu, regarding the man, those bake that would bake, and so on and so forth. Mashma d'yesh l'afot be'erev Shabbat. And it seems to be that a person really should bake on Erev Shabbat. L'hachid l'shabbat. Gam bizman ha-gemara ha-yamin ha-kavua l'zeh, k'mo sheviya Magen Avraham, uva avnotenu harabim, due to the sins of our generation, hayom hitchilu eze nashim, there are some women, lahashbit ha-minhag ha-hu, who don't follow this custom of making bread, v'dlochim min ha-ofa, and they go and they buy it, v'lav shape avde, and it's not right, to maktinim bizeh kavod Shabbat, they diminish Kavod Shabbat by doing this, and he says the proper thing, as you already saw, is to bake your own bread, and is to take challah. One last thing in the Shaar Tzion in 22, where this was the footnote to where he said that for Shabbat, you know, you should get from a kosher bakery. He writes, Ulafize afilo betocha suda nochon liza. Even the food that you're not just using to make for motzi. Now, I heard Herschel Schechter say that therefore you can't eat entermins on Shabbos. Yeah, I heard him say you can't eat entermins on Shabbos. What?
Does he think they're substandard?
No. No. So that would be part of the concern. Because he says, because the minhag is on Shabbos to eat from a kosher, from a Jewish bakery. It's not a Jewish bakery. So it has a hechsher. So he said that if you follow the logic of, again, he didn't bring the story, he just said this. I had to work, but the whole shiur today was I had to work backwards to find out why he said that. But just one second. But now I understand why he said it. He said it because of what we saw over here, that once you realize that pat haba b'kisnin is also considered to be pat akum, we are lenient all week long that you can have, and if certainly if it's better, and it's, I'm saying it's better for you, but it tastes better, then you can do it. But on Shabbos, there is a special consideration because of Kavod Shabbat, the holiness of Shabbat, and Chag, to only have from a kosher bakery. So if that's the case, from a Jewish bakery. And by the way, that may also have been what we did, you know, when we were growing up, is that all week, you know, you would buy all kinds of things, but you would buy from the Jewish bakery. Yeah.
I was walking to Shul Shabbos, and what do I see? I mean, the shopping center in my parents' home, and it's Shabbos, and I see the how do you pronounce it?
Entenmann's. Everybody says Entenmann's, but it has an N in it. Entenmann's, right.
They're unloading their...
So you didn't like, rob the truck or anything, right?
Shabbos. The unloading, I said, Shabbos. I had to think that it was a Jewish company.
No, no.
And then I see the unloading on Shabbat. I said, they want to buy it all.
Well, it's not a Jewish company, and right, there's different problems with it in terms of Chadosh and whatever that we talked about, that we talked about last time. So now we got it on two different ways, but... I don't believe it's a kosher bakery. But by the way, no, sorry, Jewish. But by the way, there are very simple ways to make something considered to be Pat Yisrael, even if it's a non-Jewish owned company or if it's a non-Jewish baker. Which means I'm not going to get into that much. But the Shulchan Aruch even brings, if you throw a twig into the fire, then it's already considered to be. No, a twig. You should throw one twig. No, I'm I'm saying if the mashkiach lit the fire, or if the mashkiach even added something to the fire, then no longer would be considered to be pat akum, and that changed. Which means theoretically, if you have a non-Jewish owned bakery that has Jewish supervision, that has kashrut supervision, theoretically, again, I don't know what really happens, theoretically, it would not be that difficult if there was a mashgiach all the time to put on the oven in the beginning of the whole thing. And that is perhaps what they do. Yes?
What about if a non-Jew is working and baking the bread in your home or the neighbor's home or whatever, or a Jew, does that make a difference?
That could be a huge problem.
If
you don't turn it on, that could be a huge problem. Right. If you don't turn it on, that could be a huge problem. That's one of the things that he was getting to in this whole article. So now you read this thing, when just have those lines like, you know, it's almost never allowed. Does that really fit in what we just now learned today? And it wasn't like I was selective in hearing what I chose. We looked at the classic Rishonim. We looked at the Shulchan Aruch. I mean, which Shulchan Aruch is he looking at when he says it's almost never allowed? So I know how he would defend himself. He would say, oh, if when is it really pat akum? If it's not from a bakery, if it's only from a private person, whatever, meaning once you limit it, then it's almost never allowed. But it's such a misleading statement in a relatively short article that it's just a little disappointing, but it's unfortunately characteristic of what certain people try to do, is to scare people with kashrut concerns instead of trying to make sense out of things and to be, I would say, a little bit more even-handed in how they express themselves. Enjoy your baking.